CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
And welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. This first interview is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have passed. In this segment of our show, Kathleen Miller will be telling us a little bit about her work, Para Archery. So, can you tell me a little bit about your work with Para Archery?
Well, because archery was actually the first adapted sport that was used for servicemen after World War II, there's a tradition or a history of being able to adapt our sport to fit whatever is presented in front of us as a challenge, either physically or mentally or emotionally, in order to have someone shoot the bow and enjoy the sport and be successful or at least proficient. So there's a lot of history involved with even the coaching certification program in the sport, how we're supposed to use our creative aspects to adapt the equipment to the person who walks in the door. So when we built our business here in 1983, we were looking to make it not only program accessible and equipment accessible, but also building accessible. So when we put our addition on, as we grew as a company, everything was wheelchair accessible right from the beginning. You know, all the design for bathrooms, doorways, ramps to the building, access to outside lanes, all of those things were made keeping in mind that we would maybe have wheelchair amputee, lower body amputee, and in any case, would be trying to access our facilities. So right from the beginning, we've had accessibility for those who wish to try the sport.
So, in your experience, what are some of the most common adaptations for someone with a disability who wants to get back into archery? You mentioned veterans, for example.
So, It really is a unique challenge that we embrace here, because I can't give you a straight answer to that, because no two disabilities are the same. However, if I'm looking at somebody in a wheelchair and they're shooting a recurve bow, which is longer from limb tip to limb tip, we have to look at things like camber on the wheels, how the person is sitting in the chair, getting that person closer to the bow side of what they're doing to draw. We have to, of course, maintain rules so that if they should progress they haven't got strapping that's too high or inappropriate use of the wheelchair as a stabilizing effect. We look at even and uneven ground. If it's a lower body amputee, a lot of times there is very little that has to be done to adapt the equipment. When we get into upper body, now we're looking at more challenges. Are we looking at complete amputee from the shoulder? Are we looking at withered or malformed upper limbs that don't allow for the full draw length? So now we start to look at really adapting not only the bow, but how the person will link up on the string. So in some cases, if there is a problem with holding the string with the fingers in recurve, then we have to look at a way of adapting how they are able to get some kind of connection with the string. If it's compound and they're using a release aid, it may be that we redesign the release aid so that it can hook up properly and they can activate with their body as they can. Full amputation of the upper arm on the string side, for instance, there's actually adapted vests where the release is actually attached to the vest, and we can get around it that way. So, again, it is very specific to the needs of the student coming in, how we adapt the equipment, whether it's the string, the bow, the mast weight of the bow, the overall length of the bow. Those are things that we look at. And then, of course, it's up to what the archer wants to do with the sport. And then we keep all those rules in mind so that if they progress, if they're interested in hunting or in target archery or whatever they're interested in doing, that we give them the right equipment that is pertinent to the rules in force so that they can continue and get used to what they're training with.
So, in your experience, what are some of the benefits of someone with a disability being able to actually participate fully in the sport?
Well, it's complete. It's not an isolation. It's not something that just happens for people with physical challenges only. It's they don't shoot against able-bodied, but they can. I mean, I coached somebody who was absolutely competitive with able-bodied athletes, but it's not necessary. But they're all on the field together, so there's a camaraderie there, and it's not something that is only for people who have physical disabilities, and it's not only for able-bodied. They would all shoot together at tournaments, and that's a nice side of feeling that you're part of the sport, not something separate.
So, what's been the greatest success you've seen for a client with a disability getting into archery?
You mean personally that I've worked with?
Yes.
Oh, well, probably it would be one of the children that we had that was born with foreshortened arms. And we built, my husband and I built a device to allow the child to hold the bow with kind of like a bicycle handle attachment to the bow itself. And then with ABS plumbing from kind of a girdle on his hip, it triangulated out to hold the mass weight of the bow in the air so that, because the child also, of course, had obviously, you know, not a lot of ability to even formulate or develop strength in any of either of those limbs. And then we adapted a release aid that could be worn portably that the child could link up onto the string. So when we got that all set up, the child could perform without any help. And that's what you want. You want to make them independent, self-reliant, and confident. And archery can do that if we just use our imaginations a little bit. And that was a success story you could see in the smile on the child's face.
Like, thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
In this segment of our show, Jennifer Meek and Leslie Yee will be telling us a little bit about Tandem Eyes. So, can you tell me a little bit about Tandem Eyes?
Sure. So, Tandem Eyes started roughly 10-11 years ago by a woman. Her name is Anne Wood. She's here in Peterborough. But she was a blind cyclist. She rode with her husband. And it was her passion to open up a club so that other folks with vision loss could experience what it was like to ride a bicycle. And so she started. All the bikes with Tandem Eyes over the years have been donated from different, whether it was a company here in Peterborough or donated privately through people that just wish to help out the club. And it's grown quite substantially, actually, over the last 10 years. We're now part of PCC, which is the Peterborough Cycling Club. So as a member of the club, we get the... what's the right word, Jen? We get the insurance and liabilities that you get, you know, riding safely when you ride with a cycling club. It's been great. It's grown quite well over the last 10 years.
So, do you use any modified equipment for the cycling?
No, not really. I mean, we have different types of bikes just because... everybody has different heights or different weights. So we do have different size tandems in order to accommodate a person's height. But other than that, they're regular tandems. We have made the seats and the handlebars for the stokers, which is the person with vision loss on the back end of the bike. We've made those seats this year a bit more comfortable, and we did raised handlebars knowing that a lot of our stokers felt more comfortable that way. But other than that, Cam, yeah, they're a regular tandem.
So we do actually have some vests that say that we're a blind cycling team, just so that we give awareness to people around us who may be driving by us or walking by us, so that they understand who are on these bikes, and it is for a little bit of enjoyment to let people know that we're doing this with Tandem Eyes as well, but outside of communication, there really isn't any modifications, as Leslie had indicated. The communication is the biggest part of this, and it means we have to constantly communicate with the person that's riding with you to ensure that they're expecting bumps, or that we're passing somebody, or that we're the scenery around us, so that we can make the ride most enjoyable for the stoker.
So, on the subject of communication, how do you go about reaching out to the vision loss community to let them know that cycling is available to them through your organization?
We've been really lucky. In Peterborough, we have a great cycling community. And as Leslie mentioned, Peterborough Cycling Club has been outstanding in terms of supporting our group and trying to encourage cyclists that are part of their group to become volunteers to help with the team Tandem Eyes. Most of it is done word of mouth. We do some advertising through some community events where we just are visible for awareness and for questions or recommendation or information. The people hear about it and they just instantly want to be part of it. So we've been really fortunate to have a great group of people and been able to support the number of stokers that do want to ride. So that's been amazing for us. But we do take any opportunity we can to have advertising awareness and promotion of this, but it's generally word of mouth and just from experienced outings with our team.
So, do you ever encounter any myths or misperceptions as to whether someone with vision loss could actually get on a cycle and navigate safely?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. Nobody's ever approached me saying, well, actually, it's not true. Whenever I myself, being a stoker, the person with vision loss, if I mention that I'm cycling, the first question is, what? How can you cycle if you can't see? So once you explain that it's on a tandem bike, and of course, then the captain is a person with sight, it becomes, you know, a different story, and they seem to understand that. But there's never any question that you can't actually cycle once they, you know, once people know that you're on a tandem bike. Then it's really just comes down to that, to the health of the person and whether, you know, how much that they are able to contribute to the bike. So
in your time with Tandemize, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
I think, you know, just seeing the community come together and seeing these extremely, some people who are extremely involved in and have been cycling for a long time and just experiencing young people and older people. I mean, we have quite a few stokers who are in their late 50s and 60s who are cycling and have never cycled before. So that's really, it's really inspiring and it's really exciting. It's what makes me really happy to volunteer in this group is just the fact that we take riding a bike for granted, not realizing that there are many people that could never do that. And in this experience, some people who have had vision loss for a good part of their life or maybe their whole life and have never ridden a bike are able to do that. And that's what it's all about, is having opportunities and abilities to experience things that for some are just an everyday experience. So for me, that's a real, that's a really pivotal moment, experiencing that type of feeling and seeing the enjoyment that our stokers are getting out of it, both young and old.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, Cam, that I'm always thrilled to see how by the end of their season, how much healthier people are, or we go farther, we go a little faster, and people just feel so much better by the end of the season. We don't want to stop. Unfortunately, we have to stop at the end of August. That's our season for riding. But, you know, nobody really wants to stop. If we could go all winter long, we could. But everyone just feels so good. And just to see how healthy everybody feels at the end of the season is always very inspirational for me, because we all know that doing any form of physical activity is just good for us, both physically and mentally. And that's what cycling does for a lot of folks that wouldn't otherwise have this opportunity.
Right. Thank you both for taking the time out to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Tune in every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. to CJAM's Top 12 Countdown. I'm your host, Taya, and every week we will be counting down CJAM's most played albums of the week. You'll hear from a variety of genres, lots of local music, and our programmers' favorite tunes. CJAM's Top 12 only plays the best of the best, so tune in every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. only on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching higher ground in Windsor and in Detroit.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Kathleen Miller told us a little bit about South Nation Para Archery, and Jennifer Meek and Leslie Yee told us a little bit about Tandemize. In this segment of our show, Cheryl Comer will be giving us an update on the work of the Neil Squire Society. So, what's the latest with the Neil Squire Society?
Oh, there's so much happening, Cam. We're always changing, and that's what keeps me interested in working with Neil Squire Society. Our latest project is our Digital Jumpstart program. Which initially during the COVID pandemic, we received federal government funding to offer computer skills training, internet access, and assistive technology support to help people with disabilities who were, you know, even more isolated than most during the pandemic. So we offered that training and assistive technology support in 2020, and we've secured funding to continue offering those services virtually so that people with disabilities can access other virtual training, medical appointments, and online social gatherings.
So, for those who might not have heard our previous interviews, can you give me an overview of what the Society is all about? What inspires your work?
Absolutely. So we were inspired by Neil Squire, the man, who in 1980 was a young university student, and Neil was in a car accident, leaving him with a severe spinal cord injury. He was unable to move his arms and legs, and he was unable to speak. His relative, Bill Cameron, who was an engineer, developed a technology to register sips and puffs on a straw connected to a computer. So those sips and puffs were the dots and dashes of Morse code. First, Neil had to learn Morse code, which would have been a challenge, but he was motivated. And so learning Morse code and then using those dots and dashes of Morse code to sip and puff on that straw translated into letters on a computer screen. And those letters formed Neil's first words and sentences after his injury. And also began the link to computer training for other people with significant physical disabilities.
So, how does the Society reach out to the disability population?
We're always working on partnerships and advertising, and it's just an ongoing job to keep our name out in the minds of people. You know, we're located in provinces, almost every province in Canada. We've got a physical location, and so we're developing partnerships in the communities where we work with other disability organizations. You know, one of the big services that we offer is employment services, so we're connected with other employment service providers, employers, to market our services to employers as well. And so it's just through those sitting on committees, advocating for accessible services for people with disabilities, and meeting like-minded organizations and people on those committees is really how we get the word out.
So, when you mention advocacy, it's always interesting to me. Do you encounter any myths or stereotypes when it comes to disabilities?
Yeah, we sure do. You know, I think it's improving. I've been working with Neil Squire Society for just over 20 years, and I think I've seen improvements in the recent years. But I think people who haven't been exposed to disability just aren't aware of what different disabilities are all about. Can assume that there's a lack of education, maybe a lack of experience, and so there's, you know, and my experience is in connecting with employers who maybe don't realize that they have people with disabilities on their teams and just don't feel equipped or knowledgeable to support
team members with disabilities. So it's educating to help people understand the abilities of people with all types of abilities.
So when you mentioned growth, has there been any success moment in your time with the society that stands out for you?
I think one of the things that stands out for me is that we've been offering our services virtually for over 10 years. We started by providing our computer tutoring through distance learning technologies, and then we expanded to provide our employment services through distance learning technologies across Canada. So that helped us to expand geographically as well. And so that's been a real success to have that geographic expansion, to not be limited by the bricks and mortar locations where we are. You know, being able to serve more isolated communities in the north, partnering, again, partnerships are such an important part of connecting with people in those isolated communities. So in Saskatchewan, for example, we've got partnerships with First Nations communities in the far north to support Indigenous communities and help those folks secure employment and learn computer skills. So I'd say it's that combination of partnerships and then delivering our services virtually, which has really enabled us to grow. And then I'm going to say also making use of volunteers. One of our newer programs, Makers Making Change, connects people with disabilities to volunteer makers who design and build affordable assistive technologies. And so volunteers are a really big part of our success as well.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need to keep advocating and moving forward in this work, what would you say?
I'd say keep an open mind, ask questions, don't be afraid to ask questions. And I think that's what we hear from some people, is they're afraid to ask questions around disability. So ask questions, ask people, what do you need to be successful and how can I support that? I think that's the simplest thing we can do.
Like, thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. Of course. Even going back to the earliest days of the show, Neil Squire's story has always been one that, to me, is a testament to the idea of not giving up on someone with a disability simply because circumstance looks difficult. For the ingenuity, creativity that went into his way of communicating allowed him to lead a better quality of life. Truth is, if you look beyond the surface, if you allow yourself to consider new possibilities, then things start to happen, doors start to open. However, if no one had been willing to take a chance in helping this man find a way to communicate, a lot of insight and a lot of hope might have been lost to the world. We're only shortchanging ourselves if we only see the surface of disability life. There's so much more to any person than just the medical baseline of how their disability may affect them. Yes, it may be the case as defined in a textbook. However, that fails to recognize the strength of the individual, support systems they may have, just their overall drive to succeed and to accomplish in this world. Look beyond the obvious. Look at the person above all else. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.